Ministry of Healing, page 140, we find this statement. Luke, the writer of the gospel that bears his name, was a medical missionary. In the scriptures, he is called the beloved physician, Colossians 4:14. The apostle Paul heard of his skill as a physician and sought him out as one to whom the Lord had entrusted a special work. He secured his cooperation, and for some time Luke accompanied him in his travels from place to place. After a time, Paul left Luke at Philippi in Macedonia. Here he continued to labor for several years, both as a physician and as a teacher of the gospel. In his work as a physician, he ministered to the sick and then prayed for the healing power of God to rest upon the afflicted ones. Thus, the way was opened for the gospel message. Luke's success as a physician gained him many opportunities for preaching Christ among the heathen. It is the divine plan that we shall work as the disciples worked. Physical healing is bound up with the gospel commission in the work of the gospel. Teaching and healing are never to be separated. And let's just glean a few thoughts from this quote. First of all, I think I have another slide. There it is. Thinking of Luke and his role of working with Paul, Luke was loved by his patients, wasn't he? And it was because he had the love of Christ in his heart, and they knew that he was interested in their welfare. And so, boy, I didn't know we had that kind of a change. There it is. He was a skilled physician, that statement said. He knew what he was doing, and he used the knowledge that he had acquired. The Lord had entrusted him with a special work, and that work was working with Paul as a team. And he combined healing and teaching, we found in that statement, and also Luke's success in healing opened doors for a spiritual work. And this is something that we can do as well. And as we go about our work, we will be loved by our patients as we demonstrate God's love and experience God's love in our own hearts and lives. They will automatically see it. You, when you finish dental school, will be a skilled physician or dentist. And you will have the skills that many young graduates do not have. And I found that at least in Arkansas, which doesn't have a dental school, the training that I had was several notches above the dentists that I got acquainted with in the area. One reason was, in Loma Linda, we did a lot more quantity of work in school than others. I've known of some dental schools that only required about 8 or 10 crowns in their experience. And so naturally, they're still learning an awful lot. Well, I don't know what the requirement is now, but it was like 60 units when I was in school. Is that still?
No, 10. 10 units. But most students do.
Well. Most people do.
Including bridges and all?
One bridge.
So 10 single units?
10 single units.
That's okay.
Just the minimum. You'll never graduate.
Things are on a point scale now, so each procedure we get points for, we have to have
a okay.
We have competencies for them.
We had to have 60 units.
They dropped the requirements, because when I came through it was 30.
Oh, is that right?
But we have 2,000 points. I think you guys got them at 1850. Because the patient pool and things is less.
Oh, I see. Okay. Well, I thought maybe you had some big money input, because our crowns helped to support the school when we were students. But anyway, nonetheless, just the thorough training that you will be getting and the orientation to treating the whole person will set you above many of those that are trained in other schools. The Lord has entrusted you with a special work. Dentistry is a unique way to minister in the lives of people. And you can work as a team with pastor and Bible work as well. And, you know, a dentist cannot be all things to all people. And so it's such a blessing to be able to team up with others in the church for making your efforts, or your contacts, lead into soul-winning experiences. You can combine healing and teaching. And also your success in healing will open doors for a spiritual work just like it did for Luke. And I think that is God's plan for us today as dentists. This is a recent picture of a botanical gardens. I wish it was our campus, but just a few weeks ago the tulips were in bloom and my wife and I had a chance to spend a few hours there. Another statement from Ministry of Healing, gospel workers, and I'm going to insert the word dentist because I think that's who she was talking to as well. Because so it's easy for us sometimes to, when she talks about physicians or gospel workers or reformers, to think it's somebody else. But I think we need to put ourselves in the picture here. Dentists should be able also to give instruction in the principles of healthful living. There is sickness everywhere, and most of it might be prevented by attention to the laws of health. The people need to see the bearing of health principles upon their well-being, both for this life and for the life to come. They need to be awakened to their responsibility for the human habitation fitted up by their Creator as His dwelling place, and over which He desires them to be faithful stewards. They need to be impressed with the truth conveyed in the words of Holy Writ. Those words being in 2 Corinthians 6:16, "Ye are the temple of the living God. As God hath said, I will dwell in them and walk in them, and I will be their God, and they shall be my people." That verse has been a special encouragement to me recently as I have memorized it. I think of what a fantastic opportunity we have to actually have God dwelling in us. He has promised to do that, and He is willing and able to do that. And we can encourage our patients as well to recognize that they are the temple of the living God and need to take care of their temples. Going on, Ministry of Healing, page 146, thousands need and would gladly receive instruction concerning the simple methods of treating the sick, methods that are taking the place of the use of poisonous drugs. There is great need of instruction in regard to dietetic reform. Wrong habits of eating and the use of unhealthful food are in no small degree responsible for the intemperance and crime and wretchedness that curse the world. I think I spend more time talking about diet than I do about brushing and flossing. Of course, my hygienist covers that area pretty well. But I constantly talk to people about their diet, and when I see children, especially with a mouthful of decay, I ask them some questions about what it is, you know, what kind of diet they have. And of course, it's always the grandparents that give the kids candy. But anyway, this is one way of talking about health on a daily basis. But you'll find you'll have other opportunities as well to talk about health in a larger sphere as well. Ministry of Healing, page 147. Every gospel worker, meaning every dentist, should feel that the giving of instruction in the principles of healthful living is a part of his appointed work. Of this work there is great need, and the world is open for it. And I think the world is more open now than it used to be, because information is so much more readily available. Dentists who take up their appointed work will not only be a blessing to others, but they will themselves be blessed. The consciousness of duty well done will have a reflex influence upon their own souls. The despondent will forget their despondency. The weak will become strong. The ignorant intelligent, and all will find an unfailing helper in Him who has called them. And dentists as reformers. Have you thought of yourself as a reformer? Of all the people in the world, reformers or dentists should be the most unselfish, the most kind, the most courteous. In their lives should be seen the true goodness of unselfish deeds. The worker who manifests a lack of courtesy and who shows impatience at the ignorance or waywardness of others, who speaks hastily or acts thoughtlessly. Where were we? What's it doing? Okay. Who speaks hastily or acts thoughtlessly may close the door to hearts so that he can never reach them. I have patients tell me stories all the time of experiences with former dentists who just chewed them out, you know, if their mouths were diseased or dirty or something. And I learned a long time ago that relating to people in this way does not help them or help them want to come back to me. We can't do anything about the past except help people learn from it, perhaps. And I tell people, you know, that's in the past. There's nothing we can do about it now, but let's start from where we are and see if we see what it will take to keep your mouth healthy. Another thing that I have found is that people tend to mirror your way of relating to them. And the term that Dr. Nedley used this morning, what was it, mirror neurons or something like that, that kind of described it. And I have found that in my own practice. If I am courteous and kind, not only with the patients, but with the assistant, and when I ask for something, I'll say please and thank you as much as I can. You know, if there's a time frame, sometimes it's hard to do that. But when I relate to them in a courteous way, they tend to reflect that behavior back to me. And I know some people come in just, you know, with an ugly mouth and say things like, nothing against you, doc, but I hate dentists. You know, and that used to really kind of get under my skin and irritate me. But now I've realized that, you know, people are perhaps reflecting some experience that they've had in the past, and if I treat them calmly and with courtesy, they tend to relate the same back to me. As the dew and the still showers fall upon the withering plants, so let words fall gently when seeking to win men from error. God's plan is to first reach the heart. We are to speak the truth in love, trusting in Him to give it power for the reforming of the life. The Holy Spirit will apply to the soul the word that is spoken in love. Dentists, words of cheer and encouragement spoken when the soul is sick and the pulse of courage is low, these are regarded by the Savior as if spoken to Himself. As hearts are cheered, the heavenly angels look on in pleased recognition. From age to age, the Lord has been seeking to awaken in the souls of men a sense of their divine brotherhood. Be co-workers with Him. While distrust and alienation are pervading the world, Christ's disciples are to reveal the Spirit that reigns in heaven. Ministry of Healing 158. I saw a bumper sticker this week that I'm not sure what the implications were from a worldly standpoint. It's probably some sick inference, but it said, smile, it confuses people. And again, you know, that could mean any number of things, but I believe in a dental office, smiling reassures people. And especially children, if you're going to treat children, just a big smile. And sometimes when I walk in the room, I try to do something funny and give them a big smile and talk to them a little bit, and that just helps relax them. And just actually treating others the way you would like to be treated is one of the best things, golden rule. Peter Dawson's training program, they use the term WIDIUM. Maybe you've heard of it. It stands for Would I Do It On Me? And so the WIDIUM rule is similar to the Golden Rule. And I have what is considered more of a needs-based program or practice, where I'm not really trying to sell and promote a lot of aesthetics, you know, 8 veneers on everybody that needs it. And if they, you know, I can ask them questions about their smile and if they're interested. But I don't spend a lot of time pushing it because I don't like to be related that way myself. I don't like to be sold something that I have no sense of need for. And I have found that in the long run, people are going to come back regularly, more consistently, if you're sharing with them just what their needs are. What do you do? It's going crazy. Okay, is that where we ended? It wants to go ahead. I guess I'm going too slow. Heavenly intelligences are waiting to cooperate with dentists, with human instrumentalities, we can put in dentists there, that they may reveal to the world what human beings may become and what, through union with the divine, may be accomplished for the saving of souls that are ready to perish. Ministry of Healing, page 159. The Savior has given His precious life in order to establish establish a church capable of ministering to the suffering, the sorrowful, and the tempted. A company of believers may be poor, uneducated, and unknown, yet in Christ they may do a work in the home, in the community, and even in the regions beyond, whose results shall be as far-reaching as eternity. And I think Mark asked me a question a couple of weeks ago, how do you balance? How do you strike a balance between your home responsibilities and the church and your practice? And it's not easy. But as we are committed to Christ and seek His will, there has to be the balance. I think the home is the first priority. And your practice, at least starting off, has to be the second priority. And then you will find time to help in the church as well. And depending on the size of the church, how many people there are. and I found this phrase in the community kind of reminds me of how I got involved in working with the community. And even though it's added some stress to my life, it has been a real blessing for our church and for our school for me to be seen as a public figure. And that was never my intention. I never dreamed of being in politics. But after practicing two or three years, my receptionist, whose husband had been a mayor there for some time, she said, I understand there's some ugly things going on in the city council. And somebody else came to me and said, would you consider becoming a council person, sitting on the council? And we need some help getting some of this cleaned up. And so I was naive, and I said, well, you know, it sounds like a way to serve and help others. So I agreed to become one of four councilmen. And it took me a few months to realize what was going on. Actually, it was later that I learned that the mayor was doing some dishonest things. But at least one of the councilmen was related to him, so he couldn't expose him, you know, and keep peace in the family. So after a while, they brought the information to me, and I was the one appointed to talk to him and say, if you will pay this money back and resign, we won't make it public. And so he did that, and everyone thought at the time that I was wanting to be the mayor, and that was not the case. And so every 2 years, when it was time for the mayoral election, they pressured me to run, and I said no. And so I it was about probably 14 years later, 16 years later, having served on the council all that time, I finally got frustrated with the fact that I was doing most of what was being done, and we were in the process of we were collecting a tax, had for 5 years to build a new fire station in City Hall, and the City Council got together and they were going to build just a metal building, like a farm building, that would be real cheap and easy to put up. And I said, no, I think we want something nicer than that. And a foundation had just been organized in the town, by three little ladies that had owned the bank for 60 years or so. Anyway, I went to them and asked them if they would give us $100,000 so we could hire an architect and build a nice city hall, something we'd all be proud of. And oh, they thought that was a wonderful idea. And they says, yes, we will do that if you'll run for mayor. So I was kind of caught in a tight place, but I did run for mayor and was elected and have served for now 10 years. But we have been able to do a lot of things. I only spend probably 4 to 8 hours a week as the mayor, but got a lot of good people that are there that help, and it's been a really good thing, especially to be in that position when rumors are going around about those weird people out there 5 miles out of town at this school, you know, that is another Waco happening or something like this. And so I was able to, you know, clarify some of those rumors. And it has been a real blessing that foundation has also helped our school a little bit over the years. But you will have opportunities to help in the community. And in most cities, it's hard to find anyone to serve in city government. And so if you have an opportunity, you might consider that. It's a real opportunity to, and from a marketing standpoint, it's good for that too, for people to see you as serving the community. And I, not that I'm recommending that you run for mayor, that's, you know, that's probably not a good thing, and unless it's a small town that doesn't require too much time. Okay, let's go on. This is a beautiful statement from page 159 of Ministry of Healing. There is no limit to the usefulness of the dentist who, putting self aside, makes room for the working of the Holy Spirit upon his heart and lives a life wholly consecrated to God. All who consecrate body, soul, and spirit to his service will be constantly receiving a new endowment of physical, mental, and spiritual power. The inexhaustible supplies of heaven are at their command. Christ gives them the breath of his own spirit, the life of his own life. The Holy Spirit puts forth its highest energies to work in mind and heart. Through the grace given us, we may achieve victories that, because of our own erroneous and preconceived opinions, our defects of character, our smallness of faith, have seemed impossible. And that is a beautiful promise that you can claim that God has a plan for you, and there's really no limits to what you can do through his strength and his grace. This is the reason for probably 90% of my success. My good wife, Harriet, she has a master's degree in food nutrition and is a registered dietitian and also an excellent teacher. She was certified in education years ago, but has a wonderful love for young people and a way of relating to them as well. Now let me take just a few minutes and show you a few slides of Ouachita Hills College and how we are endeavoring to follow God's counsel, blending theory with practical things. This is the logo that students developed a few years ago, and we are attempting to train a generation of young people who will certainly carry the three angels' messages around the world, as that depicts.
Is that what those three?
Yes. Yes. Our entrance sign, actually the sign says Ouachita Hills Academy, but we took the academy off for this picture because it's both academy and college now. But our mission statement says that Ouachita Hills College exists to hasten Christ's coming by providing a Christ-centered, character-oriented education which equips students to be successful in their chosen profession and to be active soul winners. We are endeavoring to combine strong academics, practical outreach, ministry, witnessing, deep Bible study, as well as vocational training. We are actually building all of the buildings on our campus with students and staff working together, and it's a beautiful way of bringing bonding between students and staff and a wonderful sense of camaraderie. Mentoring relationships, students and staff, and This is, slide is about a year ago. Some of you may know Deborah Arakawa. And actually, Al is on staff as he's finishing his last semester as well this year. have a canvassing program. Many of our students earn their entire way through their college through the literature ministry. And we also have a church plant going on right now. And with this college growing, we're thinking seriously of starting a church in another town about 25 miles the other direction from our college that is actually a dark county without an Adventist church. Every November and December, we take a group of college and academy students on a mission trip, and that's always an exciting thing. These are the degrees that we're presently offering: a bachelor's in theology, biblical studies, Christian business management, elementary and secondary education, and associate degrees in Christian media, personal evangelism. A few of our students. And these are some of the buildings. This was the first building that we built after we purchased the property back in the mid-90s. Served as our cafeteria building, and up until a few weeks ago, it was also in the basement, had our classrooms in it, but they were woefully inadequate for classrooms, and now we have a new facility for that, and we've just acquired some equipment for setting up a cannery down in the basement where those classrooms were, but it's our baking facility, our kitchen, and a dining room as well. And this is a college ladies' residence, a two-story house that houses about 16 young ladies. And this is one of the college men's residences. There's actually a couple of other mobile homes that we've had to add. And we hope to be building some permanent dormitories for the college before too much longer. We have a cabinet shop, and right in front of that is a farm shop, and there's a few other buildings that we won't take time to see, but this is our new administration building that we just moved into a few weeks ago, and it's a tremendous blessing to have offices for our teachers and administrators and about 9 classrooms, library, computer room, and we also have an auditorium that will seat about 300 people. And just recently, in January, in fact, we set up a set, and our recording programs for 3ABN Latino. We have quite a few Hispanic students, and they are doing a commentary on the Sabbath school lesson. And the first one, we I think this quarter's all done already, and the first one was just aired last week, and I'm told the telephones are ringing off the hook, people calling from around the country wanting more information. But there's 4 college young people that do a discussion of the Sabbath school lesson. Of course, 3ABN Latino has about 70% of their viewers are not Adventists, so it's not actually described as a Sabbath school lesson comment. But anyway, that has been a real opportunity. We have 4 cameras in the studio, and we're actually recording some of our classes and live streaming them over the internet, both the academy and the college, and also recording them for distance learning for those that want to take classes for credit. Some of the orchards and gardens on our campus, those who should apply are mission-minded, self-sacrificing, striving for excellence. Yeah, I'm sure all of you know, recognize Alistair there, and perhaps a few other students as well. And there's the administration building. Actually, a few months ago, we've now completed the entrance and sidewalks, and it's much more user-friendly. Now let me change gears again and refer to Jeremiah 29:11, where God tells us, "For I know the thoughts that I think toward you, saith the Lord, thoughts of peace and not of evil, to give you an expected end." I believe God wants us to be healthy. He wants us to enjoy life. And In 3 John 2, he says, "Beloved, I wish above all things that thou mayest prosper and be in health, even as thy soul prospereth." And as I look back at my 32 years of practicing, I am thankful that the Lord has given me the opportunity to enhance people's health in ways that I never dreamed possible when I started. Beautiful things he's created for our benefit. But I want to talk a little bit about mercury, and I don't want to get into too much detail, but tell some stories and experiences that we've had. And mercury comes out of these fillings in several forms: mercury vapor, ionic mercury, and methyl mercury. Actually, there's other ways that these fillings are harmful to the to our health as well. There's a device known as the Jerome Mercury Vapor Analyzer. I think there may be another brand beside that. But OSHA uses this to determine the mercury vapors in industry where there may be mercury involved in the processing. And they can record the amount of mercury in the ambient air. And you can take that device and you can blow into it. If you have any mercury fillings, it will tell you what the parts per million of mercury in that breath that you've put into it. And most people, if they have 3 or 4, 5 fillings, they will have at least 50 parts per million in each breath that they blow into this device. And that is the threshold that OSHA allows in industry. And we know that if, after chewing, the compression forces on fillings increases, doubles and triples the amount of mercury coming off of those fillings. So it's not unusual to find within 90 minutes of eating maybe 100 to 150 parts per million mercury in each breath. As you breathe in, some of that mercury goes into your lungs. 80% goes into the bloodstream through your lungs. 20% would be breathed out again. And then it doesn't stay in the blood very long, because within a matter of few minutes to a few hours, it goes into cells, and there is where it does most of its damage. Mercury will also pass through the tooth itself into the nerve tissue and travel along the trigeminal nerve from the lower tooth and travel in the nerve tissue. In fact, it has a proclivity or an attraction for nerve tissue versus some of the other tissue. Mercury is a CNS depressant. There's been some who have estimated or suggested that one of the reasons people smoke is because nicotine is a CNS stimulant. It helps to counteract the effects of, nicotine counteracts the effects of mercury in the nervous system. These fillings are actually qualify as a battery. In a typical battery, you have a base metal, which is the lead, you have a precious metal, which is silver, and an electrolyte to carry the current, which is sulfuric acid. In the mouth, you have a base metal, which is mercury, precious metal, which is silver, and the saliva serves as an electrolyte. So essentially, very much the same as a battery. In fact, you can take these little electric testers that electricians carry around or mechanics carry around on their belt. In fact, I used to have a device that I would measure the current and see which ones were the strongest, and we would take out the fillings according to the quadrant that had the highest values of negative first and then positive charges. And that failed years ago, and I never had it fixed. But one day I had, when I was using it, I had a mechanic in the office, and after I'd recorded the numbers on his chart, he said, "Here, take my tester and see what you see what it reads." So I did the same with his tester, and proportionally it was the same. You know, the ones with high numbers with the other one had high numbers, but his actually had a readout, and it was reading microamps. And I thought, well, that's interesting. This other just had numbers, you know, and I didn't know what it was measuring. And but it's interesting to know the body's electrical system functions on the basis of nanoamps, which is 1,000 times less than microamps. So potentially, these little batteries could be producing many thousands of times the amount of electricity that your body is trying to function on. And so the electricity generated by these little batteries is one source of pathology. The mercury itself, elemental mercury itself, is a one pathogenic pathway, and the electricity is the second. The third avenue for disease is that as this mercury passes into the gut, there are bacteria in your intestines that have the ability to methylate that mercury, form a CH3. Methylmercury is actually estimated to be 100 times more neurotoxic than elemental mercury by itself. And so altogether, it doesn't paint a very pretty picture. But I had one patient that I'm quite sure his problem was caused by the electricity from his fillings. He had suffered from angina pain for 22 years, and afterwards he thought back. It was about the time he was a student in college and a dentist had placed a large MODL on number 19, as I recall. And soon after that, he started developing these angina pains that just wouldn't go away, and he went to the Mayo Clinic, he went to specialists all over the country, and they couldn't find any cause, any explanation for his pain. But surprisingly, it was gone within days after we took his mercury out. And I didn't even know this. It was months later his wife told us about this angina problem he'd had. But so, it, you know, it wasn't anything that I had promised or was even aware of. There are three costumes of mercury: mercury vapor, ionic mercury, and methyl mercury. And these are the primary tissues that each of those can cause damage in. Spiritual Gifts, Volume 4, page 140 says, "Every poisonous preparation in the vegetable and mineral kingdoms taken into the system will leave its wretched influence, affecting the liver and lungs and deranging the system generally. Nor does the evil end here. Diseased, feeble infants are brought into the world to share this misery transmitted to them from their parents." And there have been some very interesting double-blind studies on sheep that shows that mercury is actually, in a pregnant sheep, the mercury shows up in the fetus in higher concentration than in the mother's body. The fetus and a newborn unborn child does not have any immune system, doesn't have any way of eliminating or processing, getting rid of this mercury. And so I don't have any of those slides, but it's a real interesting study that you'll, that I'll show you a website that you can find that study on. But this is showing how babies can get mercury. Mercury passes easily through the placental membrane. It passes through the mammary glands to mother's milk. And so oftentimes infants are born with significant levels of mercury in their body. And I believe it's the reason we have seen such a phenomenal increase in autism and learning diseases is because in recent years we've also been giving babies vaccines on the day of birth and several before they go home from the hospital. And within the first 5 years, they get something like 65 doses of vaccine. Not that many injections, but it's quite a lot of thimerosal, which is ethyl mercury, which is very, very toxic. Another quote from Spiritual Gifts, Volume 4, page 139, "Mercury, calomel, and quinine have brought their amount of wretchedness, which the day of God alone will fully reveal. Preparations of mercury and calomel taken into the system ever retain their poisonous strength as long as there is a particle of it left in the system." That is, you know, a lay term. It's not a very scientific statement, but calomel was a mercury-containing drug that was used in Ellen White's day. And here she, some statements she just mentions the word calomel, but here she uses mercury and calomel. And we do know that there are some people that are more sensitive to mercury than others. And I've had some patients with some really interesting symptoms, and all they had was maybe two or four little tiny occlusal pits of mercury, very small amounts. One lady, the doctors had told her she had arthritis in her neck, and she had two little occlusal pits on all of her upper molars. And we took two of them out one day, and she came back the next day to do the other two, and she said the pain on that side was gone. We took the other two out, and she said the symptoms on the other side was gone. So, you know, it's just phenomenal what the experiences we've had from sometimes just a little bit. There was one young boy, a teenager, maybe 14 or 15 year olds. He had was taking weekly allergy shots, just terrible sinus problems and difficulty breathing and so on. And his mother wondered if there might be a relationship. I don't ever promise anything. I said, we'll be glad to take them out. And he also had just a few little tiny pits. And we took them out, and she told me later that that was the end of his problem. He never had to have another allergy shot after that. His sinuses cleared up, he could breathe normally, and no more symptoms. So some people, you know, if everybody reacted with that amount, then you know, every physician in the country would be aware of it, and we'd all be dead. But anyway, the reason medical science doesn't recognize mercurial stomatitis is because there are actually 120 different symptoms that have been directly linked with mercury. And very few people have the same combination. It's just, you know, it doesn't fit any pattern. And so it's a rare physician that recognizes the potential for harm and will look in people's mouths and see if there's any mercury there and recommend that they take action. Here's a picture of a couple of fairly good-looking mercury fillings, but you can see there's discoloration around the margins over here. Let's see if I can point right along here. See those? It's been there at least 8 or 10 years. That's what they typically look like. You see that discoloration, brown and gray colors, and always when we take them out, we find all kinds of stuff under it. One lecturer calls it black scuzz, but it's a combination of the metals and corrosion products and bacteria. But, you know, if you can see a gap between the tooth and the filling, there's room for bacteria to go through about 30,000 abreast. So, you know, there's when you're looking at a microscopic comparison here, there's just a lot of room to get around those fillings. So, but some people wonder, well, if they're covered with a crown, they should be okay. Well, that's true. You don't have the mercury vaporizing from the surface. But autopsy studies have shown that there is like a tenfold increase in mercury levels in the bone under teeth that are crowned with mercury under it. So that mercury does come out. It's just not as much as, you know, it's not vaporizing. It has to go through the tissues otherwise. But how much better to make our teeth look some more like this, isn't it? Where they look more natural. And today in the aesthetic environment that we have, everybody wants white teeth. Nobody wants these colored, you know, silver-colored fillings anymore anyway. So everything is going in our direction as far as the tendencies in our profession. There's less than 50% of dentists are replacing mercury fillings now, which is a good thing. The problem is still many are taking them out in the typical way that we're taught in dental school, and that can make people real sick because they do get a high dose of mercury the way they're, you know, we were typically taught to take them out. And we've already talked about the mercury coming out of our fillings. Some of the symptom improvements that studies show from taking mercury out of the teeth, people with lack of energy. I've had many, many patients with chronic fatigue, diagnosed with chronic fatigue syndrome. And 97% of those are either extremely improved or cured. Most of them return to normal completely. And it's usually a fairly quick process because one reason for chronic fatigue is that mercury competes with oxygen in the hemoglobin oxygen binding sites. And so if your hemoglobin is not carrying oxygen, it's carrying mercury instead, then you just don't have enough energy. You're not getting enough oxygen to keep your metabolic processes going properly and removing the waste products. Metallic taste, 95%. Depression, 91%. I wish that Dr. Nedley had a stronger area in his book on depression about mercury, because I think he's coming to realize more how significant that can be with depression. I had a school teacher a couple of years ago who told me, after we had taken his mercury fillings out and we were working on some other family members, actually they had traveled all the way from Washington State to Arkansas to have this done, and I was finishing up his daughter and wife, I think it was, and I hadn't seen him for about a day or two, and he came to me just before they left and he said, Dr. Clark, you know, I've had depression for 30 years, and since you finished taking those fillings out, it's completely gone. And it's just amazing what people are called upon to endure. Bad temper, 89%, improved or cured. Chest pains, 87%, muscle tremor, 83%, lack of concentration, 80%, and that's, the study lists about 20 or 30 other things. But another statement from Dr. Alfred Zamm from Environment Medicine: mercury poisoning is the greatest masquerader of our time. Dentists are not in a position to see the cause and effect relationship of the insertion of mercury and the development of illness 3 to 10 years later. Even the patient himself does not connect the illness to the original dental process. And if they did, then it would have been discarded years ago, I'm sure. Mercury poisoning has been called a retention toxicity, meaning its effects are progressive and cumulative. So, it's kind of like smoking. You've heard people say, well, I know my uncle smoked for 60 years and it never hurt him, you know. And some people are able to endure a debilitating toxin for a long time and supposedly have no effects. But most people sooner or later will have noticeable symptoms. Many times the symptoms are subclinical. You know, it's just not enough to register on their consciousness. But one of the studies that convinced me to stop, well, actually there was about 3 or 4 things happened at one time. We had a patient, a young patient, who I had placed just a few small fillings when he was a teenager. He was in his early 20s, and his mother called me and said that he was disabled, wasn't able to work, had some muscle problem. I don't know if the doctors had even diagnosed it, but that she had read something in a farm magazine that mercury fillings could cause problems, and so she was asking me if I would take them out. And at that time, I was a little defensive because I didn't know what I do now. And I said, well, professionally, you know, I have no obligation to do so because, you know, we believe they're safe. But as a Christian, since you asked me to do this, I will do it. I'll replace them for him. And I did do that. And then a year or so later, I learned that he had recovered and had gone back to work. And so that, you know, began to register a bell. And about the same time, I got this letter from or list of some of these statements from the Spirit of Prophecy from some dear little ladies at Weimar who had a burden for mercury and to tell people about mercury. And then the other thing that kind of helped tip the scale for me was an article in the Journal of Prosthetic Dentistry. And I subscribed to that magazine for 20-some years. I've got a whole shelf, you know, a solid journal of prosthetic dentistry. And it was in May of 1984, they published a study that a dentist here in California took several patients. One of them was a 26-year-old woman with six amalgams in her teeth. And he did a T lymphocyte evaluation and see what her T lymphocyte level was, and it was like 47%. And he took her mercury fillings out, replaced them with composite, and waited for 4 months and did another T lymphocyte evaluation, and it was 73%. And that's, what, about 30-40% difference. And then he waited another 4 months, put some little amalgams inside the composites, and 4 months later did another T lymphocyte, and it was back 47-48% where it had been before, with just a few little tiny composites in, amalgams in the middle of those composites. And then he took those out and placed some gold restorations, and 4 months later did another T lymphocyte study, and it was back up about 72-73% again. And his conclusion was that there needed to be a larger study. You know, this, of course, just one case wasn't adequate. Anyway, it was about the next year I was here for the alumni student convention, and Kenneth Weichel, I think he's probably retired now, a really godly professor here at the School of Dentistry. I was talking to him and mentioned this study that I had read. And he said, you know, there's an interesting sequel to that story. He says, I know that dentist personally. He said, one day as he was practicing, the local police came in and arrested him and took him down to the police department, and he didn't know what they booked him for, but it was some silly thing. And he got home in time to see himself on the evening news. And what it was, the California Dental Association was trying to convince him that he shouldn't be doing any more mercury research, and probably they did, because I hadn't seen any more of his studies. But anyway, it's not an issue that's really receiving a lot of objective evaluation and study, unfortunately. But and as we mentioned earlier, the reason it's not more widely recognized is because the symptoms mimic many other diseases. There was a legislation, actually there's been several bills in the U.S. Congress, but they have not had enough sponsorship and been able to get enough support to pass them. But H.R. 4011 a few years ago was called the Mercury in Dental Fillings Disclosure and Prohibition Act. Some of the information that was presented there, mercury is number 3 behind arsenic and lead on the CERCLA priority list of hazardous substances. And I'm sorry it's been so long since I've studied this. I don't remember what CERCLA is, but it's some state agency that evaluates toxic things. The dental industry places 70 million mercury fillings each year, each with 1/2 to 3/4 grams of mercury, according to the American Dental Association. Thankfully, that number is old, and it's quite a bit less than that now. According to the World Health Organization, the estimated average daily intake and retention of mercury from dental amalgam is 3 to 27 micrograms, and the recommended maximum dose is 0.5 to 1.0 micrograms per day. And in actuality, there is no safe level of mercury. That even the slightest amount has been shown to cause illness in some way or other. Also, according to the Environmental Protection Agency, U.S. dentists use approximately 34 tons of mercury per year. Again, that's about 2 years old, so that information, so it's some less than that. Mercury use by dental industry increased from 2% of the total use of mercury in the U.S. in 1980 to 22% in 2004. And estimated to be 55% in, 22%, I think that was 2000, 55% in 2004. The reason for that is because we've taken mercury out of thermometers and everything else, so the actual use of mercury has come way down, which means with dentists using about the same amount, our percentage has come way up. This bill calls for immediate ban on the use of dental amalgam in children under the age of 18 years of age and in pregnant and lactating women, and a total ban by January 1, 2009. Well, of course, that... Yes, that was the bill, and I'm sure that was probably about 3 years ago, so I don't know if it's still an active bill or not. But for more information and this website, iaomt.org, you can find just a wealth of information. You can go to original research and read those if you're interested. The International Academy of Oral Medicine and Toxicology is the largest group of biological dentists in the United States. There's a holistic group too, but this has approximately 630 members at this point, and it's growing every year. And this is a caution a slide that I used on every program 3 years ago. I did 6 half-hour programs on 3ABN on Health for a Lifetime with Don McIntosh, and we wanted to make sure people didn't rush out and have their mercury fillings replaced without doing it properly. There's been some evidence, well, one physician on one of the tapes I saw tells about a patient that had 22 fillings replaced without proper precautions, and 3 weeks later she developed irreversible Parkinson's disease because of the big dose that she got during the removal process, and especially an older person who's had the tissue level of mercury increasing throughout their lifetime. That, you know, just a relatively minor increased dosage can be devastating to the nervous system. So anyway, we'll try to end on a positive note and think about the beautiful things that God has created for us. This is a picture of students on a Sabbath afternoon walk. We frequently go to a kind of a wilderness area and hike into this little stream and sit around and enjoy it for a little while and then have a picnic supper. Why that yellow color there? This is some of the gardens. Must be the projector that's causing that yellow color there. This is a greenhouse that we grow a lot of vegetables in the wintertime for the school. And this is our Academy Girls Dorm that students and staff worked together on for about 4.5 years to build. And we build as the Lord provides the means, so sometimes it takes a long time. And of course, working with students, it takes a long time anyway. But it's been thrilling to see the results. We want our buildings to reflect the quality of character that we want in ourselves and our students as well. People have told us that this is the nicest dormitory in the denomination. And it's basically a large house. There's 10 bedrooms and 5 bathrooms upstairs where the girls stay. So it's designed for 20 girls. The 2 apartments downstairs for the dean and assistant dean. And then a large room at the end here on the right that was our administrative offices and teachers' offices until just a few months ago. And we've been able to move over to the administration building. We'll be using this for a little industry that we're starting here in the next few weeks. But this building was built for $30 a square foot, which is pretty good even in Arkansas. But the Lord is good. And just another comment here, a quote from Spiritual Gifts, Volume 4, "Every poisonous preparation in the vegetable and mineral kingdoms taken into the system will leave its wretched influence, affecting the liver and lungs and deranging the system generally. Nor does the evil end here. Diseased, feeble infants are brought into the world to share this misery transmitted to them from their parents." I think maybe we already read that once, didn't we? Somehow got that in twice. And selected messages 449, "This is the effect of calomel. It torments the system as long as there is a particle left in it. It ever lives, not losing its properties by its long stay in the living system. It inflames the joints and often sends rottenness into the bones. It frequently manifests itself in tumors, ulcers, and cancers years after it has been introduced into the system. thought that's interesting. Tumors, ulcers, cancers could well be related to mercury. And final thought here from 2 Chronicles 20:20, believe in the Lord your God, so shall ye be established. Believe his prophets, so shall ye prosper. And I believe in the coming economy, anything that we can do to improve our services to our patients is going to make our businesses more viable, as well as the fact that from what I have seen, it's such a thrilling thing to know that we are improving people's health instead of potentially damaging people's health. And so I would encourage those of you who have yet to begin your practice to determine to practice without mercury. It's actually easier and better. You don't have to worry about breathing as much mercury in your office if you don't have an amalgamator and potential spills and have to worry about all of the scrap mercury and all of that. But if you and I have found the seventh generation of composites and bonding materials is so much more efficient, and cost-wise, it's better as well. So we don't need to get into finances and practice management today, but nevertheless, you'll find that your life will be better off as well as that of your patients. Got some questions, and I think we'll take a little time for questions. Yes.
Treatment plan, the removal of every amalgam in every patient, or how do you do that?
Well, I was telling someone earlier, I have been pretty low-key with this for many years, partly because up until about 4 years ago, there was four or five dentists losing their license every year from just mentioning that there could be a relationship between mercury and someone's health. The ADA's code of ethics is written so that if you're not to say anything about mercury in relationship to health, but of course if you're not a member of the ADA, you don't have to worry about that. But anyway, I found out that my closest dentist 8 miles away is not a member of the ADA, and hadn't been because he didn't want to pay the $800 or so a year. And so I said, well, you know, why am I paying out this money to promote falsehoods? About 3 or 4 years ago, I dropped my 25-year-long membership in the ADA as well. But nevertheless, at this point, because of some lawsuits that have occurred, it's a totally different ball game, and I feel much more comfortable talking about it. I didn't even lecture about it or write about it or anything for 20 years. But now the tables have turned, and there is some legal precedent that will actually protect us. So, and we could talk about that some other time. But as far as treatment planning, I will. Many patients coming to me already have a concern for mercury. Those that don't, local people that just use me because I'm the closest one, you know, I will see a bunch of old mercury fillings, and I'll ask them some questions if they have any concern about this, or if they've read anything about the connection between mercury and symptoms. And in fact, one lady just earlier this week, a new patient came in, and we got to talking about it. She had no real knowledge about it, but she did say that she was suffering from hypothyroidism, some serious symptoms from her thyroid not functioning. I said, have you ever thought about how close your thyroid is to your teeth? And she said, no, it's pretty close, isn't it? And so, I've actually had patients whose thyroid began functioning again, and after, you know, taking medicine for hypothyroidism for some time. So anyway, she was more than happy to have us chart all the mercury fillings, and even though it may be a while before she can, you know, can do it, but we like to chart them so that we can have a plan, even if it's a year or two before they can do it. And some people already come motivated and ready to, you know, eliminate it. Question? Very good question. Is there any chelation thing that will help take out the residual mercury? And detoxification is a very important thing to do after or sometimes even before. People that are really ill, we encourage them to begin using a detoxification agent. There are a number of things out. Some of the things that were used in common practice about 10 years ago is vitamin C IVs. And for a while, we were placing an IV and giving an IVC drip while we were taking the mercury out. Since we stopped doing that, I haven't seen any difference. I really don't think it made that much of a difference. But some people are still reading about it from 10 years ago, but it's not considered a standard of care at this point. Some of the products that have been used for chelation is DMSA and DMPS. They do pull mercury out of the tissue, but they often pull it out and leave it in the blood and redistribute it, and people have what they call a healing crisis. They get really sick for a week or two. And fortunately, we have some products now that are don't cause those symptoms. And one of them that I've been using, there's several actually on the market, I just haven't read up on all of them, and I don't know how this compares, but it's called NDF, Nanodized Detoxification Factors. It's basically the herbs chlorella and cilantro that are nanodized, and where the body assimilates them, and it helps pull the heavy metals out of the tissues. There's another one that is just now being researched, and a professor, Dr. Boyd Haley at the University of Ohio, has been doing research in the area of mercury for years. He, at one time, was a fully funded researcher by NIH and other federal agencies, but as soon as he started doing research in mercury, they cut off the funds. He's never had any federal funds for his research since then, but he's been very, very active and has done a tremendous amount of research. But he has developed a glutathione product. And glutathione, you may know, is one of the most powerful antioxidants that we have. And there's most glutathione that you take is destroyed in the gastric acids, and so it doesn't really do much good. Well, he has developed a product that is a lipid-based product that will actually pass through the cell membranes and bind the mercury and pull it out more effectively. And 2 weeks ago, I heard a lecture by a physician who has been has been developing the protocols, finding out what the dosage needs to be to provide the maximum detoxification. And since last June, when he began using it, they found probably it has to be at least 250 micrograms per day in order for it to really be effective. They couldn't find any much effectiveness at lower levels, and you can go higher. They've only found one person that had any kind of reaction to it, but it's not a drug. It's basically a nutritional supplement.
What foods is it in?
Glutathione?
What foods is it in?
It's in a lot of foods, but I don't know that it's, you know, concentrated enough. It's present in every cell. It's something that's, you know, part of our bodies in every cellular process. But he has treated a number of the disease children have, their learning disabilities. Autism cases, and in just a few months is seeing total recovery from autistic children
by giving this glutathione.
It's called OSR. I don't know if you'll see it. Physicians and dentists can buy it online from the company. If you have to show your license and verify your professional license, but
I don't know that. But probably this website, the IAOMC.org, IAOMC, International Academy for Oral Medicine and Toxicology.org. They may have some information on that before too long. But it is. They've also had some very encouraging improvements in the in treating some Alzheimer cases and some dementia cases as well. So, did you have a question?
I gather you're recommending composites for fillings. Mm-hmm. One would be, is there any other alternative besides the composite for fillings?
Yes, we have other alternatives. There's gold. gold restorations, and there's porcelain type restorations.
I have a question, I have a lot of people in Present Truth that come and they want their fillings out, and I tell them, if you're really really serious, get gold, gold foil or gold inlay onlay, and I tell them that because I had heard, and this was at a lecture here, you know, we have our continuing classes here. Mm-hmm. Some of the guys, I guess, or the workers are developing allergies to composites through contact with the fingers. Of course, usually we do things with gloves, but...
Yeah, I don't know how that would... They'd have any contact.
They are finding that people are developing allergic reactions to composites, and so my question to you is, how much have you thought about composites? And
there's a real controversy because the amalgamists are constantly trying to point out flaws in composites and say they're damaging to the health. There was a study done in Germany about 10 years ago that had some reference that it may upset the estrogen balance in women or something. And I was at a lecture of Gordon Christensen and Rella Christensen. I'm sure you've probably heard of CRA and their research. And I asked them directly, you know, what if they were aware of this, and they said it's just ridiculous. There was nothing substantial to that study or that statement, and it has no validity at all. Actually, right now the IAOMT is doing some research to determine if there's any effect on people's health from composite materials.
Because my concern has been, I mean, it's a plastic, basically. Mm-hmm. Once right. It's hardened. Plastic is plastic.
Right.
mm-hmm.
It's not as good as what the Lord made for us, and I always tell people that if you have somebody that has sensitivities, reacts to a lot of different things, then I would encourage them to do a materials reactivity test. It costs $240 or something, and there's a Clifford Research Institute in Chicago or is it Denver? Anyway, you have a blood sample drawn, send them to the physician, they'll send that to them, and a week later they get this booklet back that gives about 2,000, the person's response to about 2,000 different dental materials, hundreds of composites, gold alloys, bonding agents, denture materials, just almost everything we use. And it's I'm not real sure how scientific it is. All it says is satisfactory or not satisfactory. So, but people that have read about it and they're convinced that it's valid, and so you have to accept it as valid. Because if they say the product that you like to use all the time is not satisfactory, and you use it and they have a reaction or think they have a reaction, then you're going to be replacing those fillings. So I haven't yet found the products that I'm using. I have not found a patient that showed not satisfactory to it. So, not that it can't happen, but And gold is I believe, very biocompatible. I still have a lot of gold in my mouth. And whether it's the best or not, you know, I have people reading some of these other books that are not so scientifically sound about what any kind of metal does to the meridians in the body. And you know, this tooth is connected to this this kidney, and this tooth is connected to your spleen, and so on, and all that kind of thing. So a biological practice will tend to attract some of these people that are reading a lot of unscientific things, and you have to accept that as potentially a negative thing, but it's not necessarily. We are able to work with most everybody. We've had a few patients who are termed universal reactors, and those are really difficult. I've had one patient, the only thing she could tolerate was a glass ionomer fillings. Of course, those don't last very long, but it's better than leaving the dentin exposed. So anyway, there. You'll have some interesting cases, and I often don't have an explanation for what people are telling me they're experiencing, but we do our best. And if they have mercury, then we know that, you know, that's the bottom line, is they need to eliminate the mercury exposure. And what I've found, some people even show a reactivity to gold when they have mercury fillings, because it affects the immune system in such a marked way. That, but I believe after, you know, 4 to 6 months, maybe a year after the mercury is out, then their immune system can function better. Then if they did another test, they probably would not show reactivity to gold. But then again, you've got so many gold alloys, and if you have several gold alloys in the same mouth, you're going to have some galvanic activity going on, because you know, not all of these alloys are high noble. You'll have some other metals. So you can, anytime you have a combination of metals in the mouth, you're going to get some electrical activity. So the ideal thing, I think, is probably non-metal. And we have, like, it's been, I've probably only done 4 or 5 porcelain bonded to metal crowns in the last 2 or 3 years. Almost all of my crowns are all porcelain, and either zirconia based or Emax, which are so, the aesthetics are just unbelievable, and they function well. I've only had, I think, one of them that had to be replaced from fracturing. So, and it meets most people's requirements for non-metal. So. Any other questions?
The story started in your introduction.
Oh, this morning? Yes, yes. This was a, you know, it kind of blew my mind. In fact, I would like to go down and get some video of this man telling his experience, because I think it's a story that needs to be told and spread around the world. Anytime you have somebody that had died the week before you saw him and was revived, and he believes it's from the mercury that was making him so sick. But they had called me 2 years before and talked to me about having the mercury out, but they just never had done anything. So when they called, they were quite urgent, and it came up, and I took a quadrant out, and he was having pain the whole time. His wife was massaging his legs, trying to relieve some of his leg pain, and we did one quadrant, and the next day she sitting there telling me how much better he was already, and then she told me that about the week before he had collapsed, and they had found him no heartbeat, no respiration, his pupils were dilated, and they slapped him around, yelled at him, and I don't know, maybe they did CPR, they didn't say. But they called 911 and got him, I guess he was breathing a little bit or something, and got him to the hospital. And he was still alive. She said, "I would have told you this before, but I was afraid you wouldn't see him." And that's probably true, because I said, "Oh, I don't know, maybe find someone down there." But a really nice Hispanic man. And a few months later, someone from our area was down and saw him in church in the Keene Cleburne area and took a video of him, and he was telling excitedly how much better he was feeling, but you couldn't understand it because they were having a fellowship meal and there was all kinds of noise in the background. And then he turned around and ran across the room and turned around and ran back to show me how much better, you know, he was getting around. He could run and he could just barely walk. And he told me before it was just his willpower that he was even able to get from the car into my office. But he's now back at work as a chaplain and apparently quite fully recovered. So, and that's been about 10 months now. But that's one of the most dramatic cases we've had. One of the early cases I had maybe 20 years ago was a lady and her husband who were missionaries in Asia somewhere. I can't remember their Asian background, but he was an internal medicine specialist and she was a nurse. And she got sick while over there and her hair was falling out. She was having terrible stomach problems and chronic fatigue, as I recall. There was three major things, and losing weight. And they came back to this state, and her husband, who's a physician, you know, should know, and he just, you know, couldn't figure it out, and nobody could identify it with anything. And something she'd read made her think maybe it was mercury fillings, and she'd heard I was doing that. So she came down, and this must have been 1986 or something like that. And we replaced her mercury fillings, and she immediately started getting better. And about a month later, she wrote me a letter saying that three of her major symptoms were totally well. The fourth was, 80% better, she felt. But her husband still refused to believe that it was related to the mercury at all. He never did accept the fact that the mercury was related to her illness, but she was convinced it was. But we've just had, you know, a lot of chronic fatigue cases. We've had some MS cases that total recovery after 10 years in a wheelchair with loss of urinary function. And I saw this lady come bouncing into my office saying she was totally well. If she pushed herself too much, didn't get enough rest, she would begin to feel some of the symptoms again. We've had other people that had MS-like symptoms that recovered also, that eliminated those. But, you know, so many of these diseases, the doctors think, well, it looks like this, but it's not exactly like that, and it looks like this, but it's not exactly that. So they diagnose, well, this is an MS-like illness, because it's just weird because mercury affects everybody differently and it's nothing very precise.
When you do removal, I mean, do you have any special protocol?
Yes, the IAOMT has developed protocols. Actually, they don't call it protocols because in the legal environment that could has some implication that I don't understand, but they call them scientific reviews. And they've got a whole system of mechanisms to protect us and the patient. And we used to think that rubber dam was the solution, you know. But they've shown mercury passes right through the rubber dam, just like it's not there. And they've evaluated the air behind the rubber dam while they're taking out mercury with a mercury vapor analyzer, and they found 400 times more, 400 parts per million, I think it was, behind the rubber dam. So if you have a saliva ejector you can put back there, I guess that pretty well takes care of it. But
if you use nitrile rubber dam, it's a
yeah, nitrile.
Nitrile gloves are good too because it passes right through your gloves and through your skin.
Yeah. Yeah. But nitrile gloves, it's hard to feel anything through, they're pretty thick.
Yeah. Another question I had was, are you guys finding there's any problems with positive fillings at all? I heard that there's possible breakdowns with those that can cause an adverse reaction.
Yeah, we were just talking about that, and so far, there's not been anything validly shown to be a problem with them. The IAOMT is doing a study right now, though, and should be releasing that in the next few months, of several hundred different composites to see if if the chemicals leaching out of them could be a health problem.
What are some journals and stuff that we can go to find out more about
There's no actual journals. The reason dentists aren't more aware of it is because the American Dental Association does not publish much of anything about mercury research. In fact, I was surprised to see this one in the Journal of Prosthetic Dentistry back in May of 84. But the IAOMT website has just every resource you can
find.
Germany has banned the use of amalgam a few years ago, and I heard, I read something about a year ago that it was really interesting to see some of the problems that children were having gradually come down as because they weren't putting mercury in children's mouths anymore.
So at this point, scientifically, it's more of kind of a casual, I don't know what the research term is, but it's like a causal relationship. If you take it out, then sometimes some good things happen, but they don't really know the mechanism between those two, right?
They know a lot of the mechanisms as well. We know that mercury competes with oxygen hemoglobin binding sites. We know that mercury competes with sulfhydryl groups in enzyme function. And that is a big thing in terms of healthful living, because so many metabolic functions require specific enzymes. And if a mercury is setting where a sulfhydryl group is supposed to be, then it totally inactivates that enzyme. So it's not going to do what it needs to do. So there are a number of very specific mechanisms that we know that mercury is causing problems in the body.
Now, how do you approach patients if they have amalgam? Is it only if they approach you and ask them to be swapped out? Because I was spoke by my teacher that he mentioned that that's malpractice unless it's an aesthetic thing, and that we shouldn't remove it unless it's for their aesthetics.
Well, if you're a member of the American Dental Association, their code of ethics says that any mention of correlation of mercury with health is a violation of the code. And but legally, that's not a concern anymore because of some of the court cases that have transpired in the last few years. But we don't push it really hard. I have a book on the counter, Mercury-Free Dentistry, that I give away to patients that, you know, if they haven't read anything about it, they can learn about it through that. We have some IAOMT videos playing in my reception room sometimes. And actually, this series that I did at 3ABN, I put those out there sometime, and kids come in, I didn't know you were a movie star, you know. But and some people pick up the idea there. But, you know, it's amazing how many people today know that mercury is a hazard. And even a mill worker off the street, you just mentioned, are you aware you've got some mercury fillings? Are they still using mercury? And, you know, it's bad, and they know it's bad, and you don't have to argue, you don't have to talk much at all. And I usually do a little explanation, you know, yeah, mercury's vaporizing 24 hours a day from these things, and 80% of it that you breathe in is going into your blood and tissues and so on.
The filling seems so small compared to the giant body.
Yeah.
And it sounds like you're saying it releases, mercury for life.
It does.
I thought when you pack it, it's just all gone.
No. In fact, I've seen a electron microgram showing the surface of mercury, surface of an amalgam with mercury oozing up out, and then it vaporizes. I mean, you can't see the molecules vaporizing, but you can see this stuff coming up. And we were taught in school, same as you, that it's bound up chemically, and there's no mercury escaping. But that's not the case.
I'd just like to say one thing about the FDA has just recently changed their stance and have said that mercury is released upon placement, upon removal, and
this is the new part, and on chewing. So that, how often does that happen? Yeah. Or what about if you're grinding a knife, brushing your teeth?
Yeah.
Teeth
clenching your teeth at night, you're going to produce a lot of mercury.
I would imagine, and this is a question we get in Adventism, people in the health message, about the fluoride issue.
Oh. don't tempt me.
Well,
I could go for 3 hours on fluoride.
I found a website that was interesting to me. There's a guy who has a product, and the only thing I can really remember that really captivated my attention, he talked about getting the carbonic acid working somehow in the mouth. And once you do that and you have calcium in the mix, you don't need the fluoride, the tooth will remineralize. He has a whole line of products on there, but he's one of those guys who the ADA is obviously, they don't want him to speak, but he does show some of his research, and I've read through a significant portion of it, and you know, my web address is lou.edu. So I sent him an email, and when he sent the email back, he's like, don't tell anybody that I'm, but I don't know if you...
saying this. Well, you know, let me say something about the way God has developed, produced our teeth. And, well, backing up a little bit, the American Dental Association, in my opinion, has dumbed down our profession to think and believe that the teeth are these inert structures that sit in the jawbone that we can do anything with, they will still function. You know, we can embalm them and they'll still be fine and whatever, but do they tell the students now about Steinman and Leonora's research done back in the 70s.
With sugar
and the fluid flow through the teeth. And the fact that fluid, there's actually a fluid that flows from the inside of the tooth through the dentin, through the enamel.
Yeah.
You actually get something coming out of the enamel.
Yes,
and I was really interested at the meeting I was just at 2 weeks ago, the IAOMT meeting. There was someone mentioned that research. And it's obvious now that because of a poor diet, you don't have that protective inside to the outside flow. And so plaque on the outside is going to, the electricity, just electricity on the plaque will cause a negative flow of electrons and pull the calcium out of the tooth. And so that's the process for decalcification, which leads to decay. And so, you know, God's overall package of health, proper diet, and brushing is important, but it's not as important as a proper diet. And you might have some periodontal disease, but you likely won't have decay if you have adequate nutrition. But anyway, how was I going to tie that in? I don't remember for sure.
Something about fluoride.
Oh, well, yeah, fluoride is another big topic, and I'd rather not get started on it. Because a few years ago, I began to wonder when I saw how devious our profession is with mercury, could it be the same with fluoride? And after investigating, I found that to be the case. But we'll save that for another lecture. You can invite me back next year if you want to learn about that. Another question? Oh, okay. Well, thank you so much. If that's all the questions, I've enjoyed it, and it's been a pleasure talking about something that's very dear to my heart. And Lord bless you in your studies and your practices, that you'll find many opportunities to enhance the lives and health of your patients and hasten the Lord's coming as well.
Thank you, Dr.
You're welcome.